This is Brother Peter Diamond, VaticanCatholic.com. I wanted to talk about King Louis XIV, the famous Sun King. Louis XIV was the King of France from 1643 to 1715. He was the longest reigning monarch in the history of Europe. He was known for his pomp and luxurious palace at Versailles and his way of living. There are a few things that I found interesting in his life. Louis XIV claimed to be Catholic. However, he essentially drifted in and out of schism with the church because he was often favoring schismatic Gallican ideas, ideas which tried to limit the full jurisdictional authority of the Pope. It wasn't necessarily solemnly declared and articulated his schismatic break from Rome, but he was more or less drifting in and out of support for these things and fighting with the Pope. But at other times, he claimed to be a devoted Catholic and even worked with the Pope to combat Jansenist heresies. But what's so interesting about his life is the frankly disgusting pomp in which he lived. And I thought it sort of related to how he drifted in and out of schism and was used to work frequently against the interests of the Church. And I wanted to just quote from Warren H. Carroll's book, The Revolution Against Christendom, Volume 5 of History of Christendom, where he's quoting from another author about what went on during his reign and in his palace and how he lived. And I want to quote starting around page 6. He says, "Versailles, built as a capital of the empire, was indeed a spectacle for the world." And by the way, King Louis XIV was the most powerful monarch in Europe at the time. "Versailles became the symbol of the supremacy, wealth, power, and majesty of the richest and most powerful prince in Europe." And he goes on to explain how he would treat all these dukes and princes and nobles, and how his palace was a symbol for his concentration of power and control. And he goes on to say, quote, "At the Sun King's command," meaning Louis XIV, "Versailles blazed with light. A ceaseless round of intricate protocol and brilliant entertainment kept everyone busy from morning until night. Everything revolved in minute detail around the king. His bedroom was placed at the very center of the palace. From 8 o'clock in the morning, when the curtains of the royal bed were drawn aside and Louis woke to hear, 'Sire, it is time,' the monarch was on parade. His nose was rubbed down with rose water and spirits of wine. He was shaved and dressed, observed by the most fortunate of his subjects. Dukes helped him pull off his nightshirt and pull on his breeches. Courtiers argued over who was to bring the king his shirt. There was a throng in his chamber when he prayed with his chaplain and when he ate. Protocol determined who had a right to sit in the king's presence and whether on a chair with a back or only on a stool. So glorified was the monarch that even when his dinner was passing by, courtiers raised their hats and swept them to the ground in salute. In March 1686, a bronze statue of the Sun King, crowned with victory, was dedicated with great ceremony." End quote. I thought that was interesting considering the just disgusting level of pomp that this guy lived in. His nose was rubbed down with rose water and spirits of wine. He couldn't even put on his own clothes. This is an example of bad will back in a more Catholic age. Tremendous spiritual blindness, where a person like this could actually think that maybe he has a shot at salvation living in such disgusting, excessive, worshipful luxury. And as a result of sins like that, he fell into working in the temporal sphere against the interests of the church frequently. It also speaks to the human respect of the priests and the chaplains who were in France at this time. Did anybody rebuke him for this excessive and ridiculous activity? If he had been told in a clear and charitable way that this is mortally sinful excess, perhaps he would have reformed himself, especially if many different priests told him this. Those who didn't sinned mortally by omission, and the fact is that there was probably almost no one who rebuked him. According to some authors, King Louis XIV became somewhat more spiritual and repentant at the end of his life. How sincere that was, it's obviously difficult to say. In short, I think that some of these facts illustrate once again that the road to hell is broad. I think it also illustrates why even today we see that people do not receive the graces to see the truth and accept the truth because they are not doing what they should be doing in their daily lives. They don't have the spiritual dedication day in and day out. They're very selfish in their day-to-day lives. If they were more charitable and giving in the sense of putting out more effort for God, then they would receive the graces to see the truth. But because they are selfish of heart, God blinds them and they wind up fighting against the truth. And this astounding selfishness caused him to assert his own authority over the church in France. And there was a constant battle between the Pope and the King of France for rights in those areas. It's also interesting that at the end of his life, Carroll points out that on April 14, 1711, the eldest son and principal heir of Louis XIV, the Duke of Burgundy, died of smallpox, followed within a week by his wife, a great favorite of King Louis, who had contracted measles. Louis also lost his grandson. Louis was prostrated by grief and told his doctors, "I am infinitely miserable." He said, "I lost, almost within a week, a granddaughter and a grandson, and then their son, all of them with great expectations and all tenderly loved. God punishes me. I have merited it." End quote. So we see that at the end of his life, he was very unhappy, despite having spent decades in pure selfishness, adulation, and gratification. In conclusion, I think it shows again that the road to hell is very broad and that most people go there.